ॐ सहनावतु सहनो भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। We have completed chapter 1 last week. Chapter 1, as it is entitled, as Arjuna Vishada Yoga, which means the yoga of Arjuna's despondency. Arjuna's mind was disturbed. So this entire chapter talks about how Arjuna, who was so much brimming with confidence when he came to the war, slowly his situation deteriorated, his mind deteriorated and got completely disturbed, and because of which he became physically incapacitated to act. This is also called as the yoga of Arjuna's despondency, because in life to fall is only to rise. Is not to fall and stay put permanently there. So this fall of Arjuna will make him slowly surrender to Krishna, and the knowledge instilled by Krishna will make him rise once again and fight the battle. So most of us are like Arjuna. Due to the skill, due to our intelligence and skill that we have got from schools and colleges, and due to the intelligence we have gained from our experience, we also brim many times with confidence. But when we face a challenge, our emotions can also topple our thinking. At that time, we are also like Arjuna, succumbing to our emotions, lose our control over our own personality, and then become physically incapacitated to act. Gita begins with the curiosity of Duryodhana's father, Dhritarashtra, a blind king. So it begins with the curiosity of an ignorant person. The antidote for ignorance is knowledge, which will be given by Lord Krishna from the second chapter. So when Dhritarashtra asks Sanjaya, his charioteer, please tell me what is happening on the battlefield of Kurukshetra between my sons and the sons of Pandu. Here itself, Gita is trying to tell us the root cause of us losing the peace within is our attachment. Generally, you would have heard this statement by many people: love is blind. To me, it is not love that is blind, it is attachment that is blind. When they use the word love as blind, they say that love doesn't discriminate. It is a feeling that is a feeling of oneness towards everybody and anybody without discrimination. In that sense, they use it as blind. When I say attachment is blind, I mean you are blind to the feelings of the other. You are focused on the feelings of yourself only. Dhritarashtra is more concerned about his sons, not at all bothered about his brother's sons, of whom he is the guardian, because they lost their father. So because of this attachment, what should have been a peaceful personality turns into a warring personality. In each one of us, essentially we are divine, says Vedanta. All the sages say that your essential nature is divinity. You are divine, no matter what you appear to be. You can appear to be a saint or a sinner, but essentially you are God Himself. You are divinity. If that be so, then how is it that now, in my present condition, I am agitated, I am disturbed, there is conflicts within, I have lost my peace of mind. How is it? It is explained by this significance here, that it is due to your attachment. Strictly speaking, the reason for this war is Dhritarashtra's attachment to Duryodhana and his other sons. So when Dhritarashtra asked Sanjaya, who had the power to see what is happening miles away, which was given to him by sage Vyasa, Sanjaya reports to Dhritarashtra. He says that Duryodhana walked up to his guru, Dronacharya, and started talking about warriors on both the sides. He was praising them, Kauravas and Pandavas. He was pretending, as it were, he was balanced and objective, he is neutral. But from his walk, from his talk, it was evident that he was trying to hide his ego and egocentric desires. In spite of having 11 battalions and Pandavas having only 7 battalions, Duryodhana still felt insecure. In verse number 11, through his own words, you could clearly see that even though he had more in quantity, he still felt insecure. It was because from inside, he is someone who functions based on egoistic attitude and egocentric desires. No destructive person can be happy. No constructive person can be unhappy. A person like Mahatma Gandhi, whatever may be the situation around him, he never lost his mental balance. A terrorist, whatever may be the scenario externally, he cannot be mentally balanced. It is very evident from the animal kingdom. If you see tiger, which is constantly killing, destroying, is constantly having that feeling of insecurity. A lizard constantly destroying is also having this insecure feeling. So it is not the place or the person, it is not the world that disturbs you, but is your own mind. This is one of the main lessons that Vedanta teaches. It is not the world that disturbs you, but it is how you contact the world. We think it's my husband, wife, children, friends, relatives, society, politicians, etc., etc., disturbs me. Vedanta says, none of them are capable of disturbing you unless you allow them to disturb you. So, in verse number 11, Duryodhana, through his speech, clearly exposes his insight. Listening to this, Bhishma wanted to cheer him up and cheer the entire lot, as Bhishma is the commander-in-chief of Kaurava army. And he takes up his conch and blows the conch to cheer himself and the rest. It's very significant But the call for the war first comes from the Kaurava side. A constructive person will never have war in his mind. He may be ready for a war when it is thrust on him, but he never has war in his mind. So Pandavas never start the war. They did not start the war. It is the Kauravas who started the war. Bhishma blows the conch. And immediately from Pandava side, Krishna blows his conch and accepts the challenge. Like Shakespeare says, beware of entrance to a quarrel. Being in beareth that the enemy beware of thee. Beware of entrance to a quarrel. Being in beareth that the enemy beware of thee. You don't be the cause of a conflict or a war, an argument. Don't be a contributory factor in starting anything negative. But once you are pulled in, make sure that the other person gets his or her lesson. Don't run away. Face it when the situation confronts you. So Krishna accepts the war. And along with Krishna, Arjuna and the rest of the Pandavas, they blow their conches. They all are ready. So this clearly shows Arjuna's confidence. In fact, while he was in exile in 12 long years, and the 13th year when he had to spend his time in disguise, in all these times he has been practicing, he has been keeping his skill alive. He knew that Duryodhana's nature being so negative, that even when we fulfill the conditions and we come back and claim the kingdom back, he's not going to give it. So we might have to fight it to get it. So he was ready. And they tried Sam, Dham, they tried the discussion method, they tried even going to the level of saying that let us just have 5 villages. For which Duryodhan said, not even a square inch of land I will part with. There was no other option but to go to the war. So righteousness is on their side, skill is there, confidence is there, everything is there. With that confidence, Arjuna tells Krishna, Sena Yor Bhayor Mati Ratham Stapayami Achyuta. O Krishna, O Achyuta, O God, O Lord, please take my chariot and place it in between both the armies. I would like to see who all have come to fight. A slight tinge of arrogance you can see in his words. My chariot. Please understand, here also Gita is trying to teach us something. And that is, there is nothing in this world that could be called as yours. You are a temporary trustee, not an owner. When you buy any property, they'll give you what is called a sale deed. When you read the sale deed, it will say so-and-so sold it to you on this so-and-so date. And that so-and-so had purchased it from so-and-so. And that so-and-so had purchased it from so-and-so. It goes on. Right? You are a temporary trustee. Swamiji puts it very light-heartedly. He says, when you are going to your office in the car provided by your organization, the latest Mercedes-Benz has been provided to you because you are holding such a position, you have been serving them for long, so they have given you this latest Mercedes-Benz. So you are driving that on Delhi roads, even though there is so many potholes, you still say, what a fantastic car, beautiful shock absorbers. You enjoy the journey. And you buy the same car tomorrow and you drive in that car, every time it hits the pothole, he says you have a heart attack. Why? Because earlier it was a car provided by your company. Now it is your own car. The same car, same model, same road, same driver. Once, earlier you were enjoying it, now you don't. Why? Because now you have the ownership attitude. Earlier you had a trusteeship attitude. So here Arjuna says, my chariot. So Krishna smiles at it. He knows that Arjuna is externally ready, but he is not ready internally. Lot of people ask, why do we have to study Gita? Precisely for this reason, that all of us might be ready. We go to finishing school, right, in Switzerland or wherever, that finishes you externally. In the sense that a kind of skill and things that you require externally probably gives you. But the study of scriptures, Gita, Upanishads, etc., they prepare you internally. This Arjuna lacked, the inner preparation. So when Arjuna spoke to Krishna and said, take the chariot and place it in between both the armies, Krishna knew there's a lot of work to be done before Arjuna can plunge into war. He's not completely ready. So Arjuna wanted to do the SWOT analysis. He wanted to see who all have come to fight. The strength, weakness, opportunity, threat of both sides. He wanted to see, assess the scenario. Krishna takes the chariot and places it in between both the armies as he was told. But interestingly, he places it right in front of Bhishma and Drona. Because Krishna knew, if at all he had some weakness where his emotions can overpower him, it is when he is taken in front of Bhishma and Drona. Supposing he had taken in front of Duryodhana, he would have immediately started the war. But in between, when after the war has been started, when he sees Bhishma, Drona, suddenly he'll fizzle out. So he wanted to prepare him in the beginning itself and wanted to teach him a lesson indirectly. Any teacher worth the name will never resort to direct methods immediately. Only indirect. So by taking the chariot in between both the armies and placing it right in front of Bhishma and Drona, Krishna speaks to Arjuna and says, behold the aged Kuru. They are assembled on this battlefield. They have come to do their duty. He doesn't say all these things. These are all inferred. You must also follow them. They don't have any personal interest in this war. Duryodhana might have, and few others might have, but neither Bhishma nor Drona has any personal interest in this war. They have come to the battlefield merely to fulfill their duty. Similarly, Arjuna, I just heard you say my chariot, so don't bring your personal likes and dislikes here. Just be there doing your duty. This is another challenge, another very important lesson that Gita is trying to teach us. That is, every human being is a bundle of likes and dislikes. All of us have likes and dislikes. Our mind is made up of likes and dislikes. And we also have what is called as duty, responsibility, action. Many a times our likes and dislikes may come in conflict with what we ought to do. We may not like what we ought to do. Or we may like what we ought not to do. There, the Gita tells us, nothing wrong with your likes and dislikes, but you should never come under the sway of your likes and dislikes. You should always use your intellect, discriminate, analyze, and do what you ought to do. If your likes and dislikes are in line with your duties, fine. If not, you must develop the strength to follow your duty. In fact, I told you in the beginning, when we started the Gita, the entire Gita is sandwiched between two words, dharma and mama. The first word of Bhagavad Gita starts with dharma. Dharma kshetre kuru kshetre samaveta yuyutsavaha mamaka pandavas chaiva kima kurvata sanjay. The word that begins Gita is dharma, duty. Dharma means duty, nature. And the last word that concludes Gita is mama. Yatra yogeshwara krishnaha yatra pato dhanurdharaha tatrashir vijayor bhuti ruvor nitir matir mama. So the entire Gita is sandwiched between dharma and mama, mama dharma. So the message in Gita is what? Mama dharma, my nature, my duty. I am supposed to be just following my nature, my swadharma. The dharma of the sugar is sweetness. Dharma of Kerala is bitterness. Similarly, each one of us have a flavor, have a dharma, have a nature. It could be singing, it could be dancing, it could be talking, engineering, whatever it is. Simply following your dharma for the welfare of the universe. This entire universe is coexistential. It's interdependent. Human beings are dependent on the plants for oxygen. Plants are dependent on us for carbon dioxide. Even amongst human beings, engineers are dependent on the doctors, doctors are dependent on the engineers. It goes on. Each one has an exclusive nature, and we must supplement and complement each other by doing our duty. I should not think, I am also doing my duty, he is also doing his duty, but he is getting more, I am paid less, getting into these sort of comparisons. It will only worsen the scenario. Understanding that we all coexist, we must do our duty. So Krishna takes the chariot and places in between both the armies, right in front of Bhishma and Drona, and tells him, take Bhishma and Drona as an example. Do your duty. Don't get into personalizing the issue, which will make your emotions overpower your thinking. But he doesn't say it in so many words, because he is not asked. He cannot start his lecture. A guru is born when the Sishya is born, isn't it? When there is no Sishya, where is the guru? If there is nobody to listen, to whom are you supposed to talk to? Not walls. So Krishna doesn't start his sermon. In fact, Bhagavad Gita doesn't start in the first chapter. It begins from the second chapter, verse number 11. Because there Arjuna had become a Sishya. By becoming a Sishya, he surrenders to Arjuna, Krishna, and says, you are my Guru. Then the Gita can start. So this entire chapter is to make us also understand our shortcomings, and it instills the importance of becoming a Shishya. Bhagavad Gita can make sense to us, can only teach us when we have become Shishyas. Many a times, people who come to Gita classes or read the text Gita out of curiosity, not that they have become Shishyas. You may try to understand what the Gita says, but not follow what it is preaching. And unless we follow what it is preaching, we will not get the benefit. And a following is possible only when you become a Shishya, not when you are a curious student. So there Arjuna sees Bhishma, Drona, and his mind goes to the past. I was playing on the lap of Bhishma. I was taught all this art of archery and everything by Drona. All these are my gurus and friends and relatives. From Shatru Bhav, his mind comes to have Mitru Bhav. Slowly, slowly his emotions overpower his thinking. When your mind takes over your intellect, it further takes over your body also. Arjuna is not able to think, and then he is not able to act. He is not even able to stand there. He clearly tells that my head is spinning, my knees have become weak, I am not able to hold the Gandiva, his famous bow. The very mention of the name Gandiva instills fear in the other. And he says, I am not able to hold it. My knees have become weak. My Gandiva is slipping, means he is sweating. All these are symptoms of stress. This is another lesson that Gita is trying to tell us. That is, stress is never external. It is always internal. Till this moment, he was not stressful. Suddenly now he is stressed. Where does it come from? It's come from his own mind. It has come from his own desires and expectations. So, mind overpowered intellect and the body, he became totally incapacitated to act. Who? Not an ordinary person, a person of Arjuna's caliber, who was considered as number one in the art of archery, who had won many battles and got the name Dhananjaya, winner of wealth. Somebody who had intelligence and experience. Are you with me? Somebody who had intelligence and experience. In spite of all his intelligence and experience, he still succumbed to his emotions. So he says, Gandivam samsrate hastat. Gandiva is slipping. My Gandiva is slipping from my hands. My knees have become weak. I am not able to stand. My mouth is parched. These are symptoms of stress. And he says, I will not fight. But Krishna is not supporting him. He is not immediately saying, okay, if you do not want to fight, let us go back. He is not saying that. He is just keeping quiet. So he starts giving the so-called logic to impress upon Krishna, so that they can stop fighting. He thinks he is talking logically, but he is prattling. See, the problem is, when you lack an intellect, you don't even realize that you lack the intellect. Like Swamiji says, a mad man doesn't know that he is mad. Do you understand the statement? To the extent each one of us are mad, we don't realize that we are mad to that extent. The fellow who is drunk, he doesn't realize that he is drunk. So, when we are deluded, we don't even realize that we are deluded.
But you know, his concern that is real. It's something like probably you would all be concerned for. You're fighting your relatives, people who raised you, your brothers.
The concern should be before you go to the war, not after. You know, in Tamil, we have a scripture called Thirukkural. Thirukkural is also very famous. There he gives one very interesting verse. He says, Enni tuniga karmam, tunindapin ennuvam enbadu ilukku. Means, before you plunge into an action, you must think. Not during and after. He had this thinking. But in the scenario when he saw Bhishma and Drona, his thinking was overpowered. If there was no righteousness, then firstly, Krishna would not have supported them. Krishna would not say, I will be your charioteer. The fact that there is dharma on their side, Krishna said, I will be with you. In fact, Arjuna chose him and Krishna was happy because Krishna would have only been with dharmic side, not on the adharmic side. So you must think the concerns, whatever you have, must be addressed before you get on to action. Not while on the battlefield you don't think all these things. Understand? So it was all thought about war. That's why they tried the methods to avoid the war, because they knew if they go to war, they had to, so many people had to be killed, so much of destruction will be there. All these things were thought about. They tried avoiding, but there was no other option. When the situation has turned cancerous, and that also the third stage of fourth stage cancer, the only remedy probably available to the doctors are only operation. Doctors are not interested in trying to give painful treatment to the patients. But if they have no choice, they would probably have to resort to that. That's the same logic here, because of which they are now saying, let us fight. They didn't want to decide this on a battlefield. But Duryodhana said, that's where we have to decide it. So there is no other choice. So, Arjuna is not a great thinker, generally also. And in this context, he is definitely not a thinker. A person who is objective to whatever extent he has developed his intellect will be available to him. Let us say 10% intellect is there, or 20%, whatever percentage of intellect Arjuna has. That intellect he would have now in the battlefield only if he had control over his emotions. Now he's already lost his control. Now even the 10, 20, 30% whatever intellect he had, that also will not be available. This is what happens to many of us also. When the trouble is somebody else's, we are able to think. We are able to give advice. Same problem when we have, we are not able to act on the advice we gave to somebody else.
The thinking is not clear, obviously.
Thinking is muddled. So Arjuna starts arguing, starts giving his so-called logic. Firstly, he says, I see bad omens. Till now, he didn't see any bad omens. Please understand, a mind that is disturbed gets into all the negativities. fails to see the positive things around, starts imagining, projecting, positing, all these sort of things happens. And then he says, it is better if I am killed rather than we killing them. They are all our relatives. Even when he speaks, you can clearly see, because many people think it is Arjuna who wanted to follow the path of non-violence and Krishna made him get into violence. This is another misunderstanding that prevails. Arjuna is talking and trying to convince Krishna to get away from the battle. Isn't it? So a lot of us think that Arjuna wants to follow the path of non-violence. Is that true? We pointed out in a particular verse how his mind speaks, and we showed that he is not really developed to be following the path of non-violence. What does he say in that particular verse? Anybody remembers that? You can see the book, no problem. See the translations, you'll understand. You read those translations, we'll see. See, he says, I desire not victory, O Krishna, nor kingdom, nor pleasures. Of what avail is kingdom to us, O Govinda? Of what avail are enjoyments or life? He's speaking as if he is risen above all this. Immediately he says, those for whose sake we desire kingdom, enjoyments and pleasures, they stand here in battle, having renounced their lives and riches. He is referring to Bhishma and Drona, basically. See, in other words, this is the state which is defined by Bhagavad Gita as Rajasic renunciation. I told you there are three types of renunciation, which Lord Krishna talks about in the 18th chapter. Sattvic renunciation, Rajasic renunciation, and Tamasic renunciation. What are the differences? What is Sattvic renunciation, Tamasic renunciation, Rajasic renunciation?
Tamasic is when you don't know the value of something.
And you give it up. Okay. What is Rajasic?
Rajasic is not even wrong.
You know the value. I mean, it's somehow, I mean, you know
about. No, okay, you know the value, then?
You don't want to go through the
quality of renouncing it. Okay, you don't want to go through the difficulty of gaining it. You don't have the guts to go through the difficulty to gain it. Therefore, you say, what is in it? Like, what is in a name? You may be interested in name and fame, but to get name and fame, there's so many things to be done. Okay, what is in heaven? What is in money? Generally, when somebody comes and talks to you, without you asking them or prompting them in any sense, they come and tell you, what is there in money? There is no happiness in money. I'm not interested in money. Be rest assured, that fellow is terribly interested in money. Nobody asked him. Like I said, money gives you option, not necessarily happiness. Not does poverty give you happiness. Just because you don't have money in your pocket, does it mean that you become happy? It has nothing to do with happiness, whether you have money or you don't have money. Money gives you option. You can sit down and cry in Delhi. If you have money, you can go and sit down and cry in Anandaspa or in Switzerland. That's the only difference. Money gives you option and it has a practical value in the world. If you understand that, then you will use it at the practical level. So, sattvic person understands the value and has risen above it. His mind is free from it. His mind is free from the object, but he knows the value. Rajasic person knows the value, his mind is not free because of the difficulty involved in attaining it. He says, I am not interested in it. Tamasic fellow doesn't know the value, therefore he gives it away. A Mont Blanc pen, he doesn't know what the value is, he simply gives it to somebody and then he realizes he done a mistake. That is tamasic renunciation. Are you with me? So here Arjuna is in rajasic renunciation state. He is not in non-violence condition. He says he had fought many battles before. He had killed there also people. He had inflicted injuries there also. So here they are all our relatives. See, usually when you go to a war, your relatives on your side, your opponents on the other side. Here the war scenario is very interesting. Many of your relatives are on the opponent side also. Okay. So Arjuna is seeing relatives there, therefore he doesn't want to kill them. It is not that he is risen above killing. If he had risen above killing, Krishna would not have told him to go and fight. He is not yet gone above the Kshatriya level. And being a Kshatriya, when there is a war, and that too when you have to defend righteousness, and that's the right thing for you to do. Therefore Krishna asked him to do it. If you filter further, that's the case. But generally he has attachment with his cousins also, even though they were negative people.
But more towards Drona.
Yes, more towards Bhishma and Drona. Yeah. In fact, he says that in the second chapter. They are worthy of worship. How can I fight with them? And all that. So he says, I am not interested in this, I am not interested in that. It is better that we die rather than killing them. All sorts of things. As if he has become a monk. He has not become a monk. See, a person like Arjuna, Swamiji says, even if he goes to Himalayas, he will be contemplating on those things. Temporarily he will be enjoying the serene environment. Like he says, if a businessman goes to Himalayas for a few days, temporarily he may not think of his business. Afterwards he will immediately think, let us start on Himalayan silk house here. But some his mind functions. See, wherever you go, you carry your mind. If you have this class for 1 hour, you probably will be able to maintain the sattva in you. Right? Supposing I continue, let's say for 3 hours, 4 hours, suddenly your rajas and tamas will start manifesting.
That's
isn't it?
That's what you see when we do the 1 day workshop. What happens?
So basically, our mind, we need to understand the nature, our level of the mind. And accordingly, we should proceed in life. You can't suddenly try to take a leap, assuming yourself to be extremely sattvic. So these I do not wish to kill, though killed by them, O Madhusudana, even for the sovereignty of the three worlds. How then for the earth, he says in 35. He says, I wouldn't kill them even for the sovereignty of three worlds. How will I do it for just this kingdom? I'm not interested in all these things. And then he says, we will only gain sin by killing these desperados. You don't gain sin by killing desperados. You gain sin by killing saints. You gain sin by killing your mother, your father, somebody who you should be grateful, right? And your mother and father will not find themselves on the opposite side. Are you with me?
That's not true today.
No. I'm talking about motherhood.
I don't have a problem.
I'm talking about motherhood. When I talk about mother and father, I'm talk about parenthood.
The truth.
You understand? In Kali Yuga, many things change. So that's a different matter. But the definition of parenthood, that will not find itself on the opposite side. You understand? So, all these are logics of a person whose mind is disturbed. So don't give too much weightage to what he says. And then, very interesting is, in verse number 38, he says, although these with intelligence, overwhelmed by greed, see no evil in the destruction of the family, and sin in treachery to friends. O Janardana, why should not we who clearly see evil in the sin, evil in the destruction of the family, learn to turn away from the sin? When we did these words, I explained to you, an extroverted mind sees even a small blemish in others very clearly, but fails to see a huge blemish in oneself. This is a very typical trait of an extroverted mind. To the extent we are extroverted, we also do the same thing. We constantly blame the world for our condition. Isn't it? Because of that person, because of this fellow, because of my husband, because of my wife, because of my children, because of my parents, because of the politicians in the country, etc., etc., as though I am blemish free. So the poem Turkey in the Ant, the poet says, ere you remark another sin, with thine own conscience and look within, control thy more voracious will, nor for a breakfast nation's skill. A turkey which was tired of eating the same food every day. He says, turkey tired of common food forsook the barn and sought the wood. Every day same dal roti, you got fed up and said, let's go to Chinese or Japanese. Something like that, the turkey decided, let's go to the woods because there are ants there. Let us feast on the ants. So the small ones were scared. So the mother bird said, don't worry, don't be scared. Very tasty food, just indulge. And it was destroying mountains of ants. The entire ant hill it was feasting on. Then suddenly it was cursing human beings. It says, our life is so blessed if only we escape the poulterer's knife on Christmas Day. Every Christmas, they kill us and they feast on us. Oh, these human beings are deadly fellows. They're deadly people. Why it is killing millions of ants? It is talking about the same crime done by human beings. It is not able to see the same blemish that it is doing. So he says, the poet says, ere you remark another sin, with thine own conscience look within. Before you talk ill about others, open yourself. Look within. Find out. Control thy more voracious will, nor for a breakfast nation's skill. One turkey is killed by human beings on a Christmas day, which is shared by maybe 7 or 8 people, once in a year. You are killing nations of ants for one breakfast. Now what about lunch and dinner and in between meals? And the whole year, if you take it, the same crime is so much exaggerated in you and you don't see it. Usually, when you criticize somebody of a fault, the same fault is there in you much more in proportion. But you fail to see it. Small blemish in others, you pick it up. This extroverted tendency we have. We usually think and we are convinced from inside that I don't need any correction, I am all right. Because usually when people come to Vigita, after the class they say, you know, this class would have been really apt for my husband, but he wouldn't come. It would have been apt for my wife, but she wouldn't come. Because they believe that this is all needed for the other person, not them. That's why when they get back home also, they immediately give one lecture. And the more lectures you give, the other fellow doesn't want to come. He's not interested in coming to the class. That's why Lord Krishna says, don't give any lectures. Don't disturb the minds of people. He says that in the third chapter. Don't disturb the minds of the ignorant. If at all you want to do something, simply lift the knowledge and set an example. Don't give lectures. Lord Krishna says that in the third chapter. We do the opposite. We neither lift the knowledge but continue to give lectures. So he says, here when Arjuna speaks, you can clearly see the extroverted mind in Arjuna. When he says, although these with intelligence overwhelmed by greed, he is able to see that Duryodhana has come to the battlefield to fight with them because of his greed, overpowering his intelligence. It may be, it's a good observation, it's a right observation. Duryodhana's greed is the cause. Right? But he is not able to see that he has attachment within, weakness within. The fault that he has, he is not able to see. And another interesting thing is, he says, I am very clear. He says, O Janardana, why should not we who clearly see evil in the destruction of the family? He has no doubts. I told you, just like how you have three types of renunciation, you have three types of intellect, says Krishna. Sattvic intellect, Rajasic intellect and Tamasic intellect. Again, this is coming in the 18th chapter only. Tamasic intellect understands wrong as right and right as wrong. It understands love as attachment and attachment as love. Okay. Perverted. Ulta. Everything ulta it understands. And it is very clear and firm. It's not open minded. Rajasic intellect is confused. It understands righteousness wrongly. For example, with the same example of love and attachment, Rajasic intellect may understand love as something that necessarily will have to be expressed. So it might go with expression. Are you with me? Whereas in Tamasic intellect's case, it understands attachment as love and all love as attachment. Sattvic intellect.
Well, just can you elaborate attachment as love?
Ulta. What is, who is a, see, in other words, benefactor as malefactor. Somebody who is a benefactor, instead of being grateful to that person, you think that person is there to destroy you. That's tamasic intellect. Rajasic intellect might go with your expressions and understands righteousness wrongly. Sattvic intellect understands right and wrong clearly. The difference between Sattvic and Rajasic is, Sattvic and Tamasic is, both look same outside. Sattvic intellect is also firm, but it is open to change, open to views. Rajasic intellect is closed. Tamasic intellect is closed. And it goes on emphasizing, I am telling you, I am clear. Like in that poem, six blind men, an elephant. All of them were blind and they went to see how an elephant looks like. And when they speak about an elephant after touching different parts, each one is so firm and clear and is closed. Deny the fact who can, says one fellow. And one fellow says, even the blindest can see. You know, that's sort of an emphatic approach. A learned person will never be emphatic. He will put forth his views and he says, you can probably have a different view. We can probably look at it from different angle. I am open to it. Like even in Gita, Lord Krishna finally says, yata ishyasi tata kuru. I have said what I have to say. Now you do what you like. You understand? But as a tamasic fellow will continue to argue, will continue to obstinately clinging on to it. So here Arjuna is able to see the fact that Duryodhan's intelligence is overpowered by his greed, Duryodhan's greed. But he is not able to see that his intellect is overpowered by his own emotions, attachment. He is not able to see that. This he sees in the second chapter, little later, where he says, my nature is overpowered by the taint of pity. He recognizes that. See, the problem is not ignorance, lack of awareness of ignorance. In many cases, it is not the disease that's the problem. It is awareness of the disease existing in us that's the problem. If you want to learn, the most important quality you must have is awareness of one's own ignorance. I must first know that I do not know. And then I would surrender to somebody who knows and learn it. But if on the contrary I think I know, then what will happen? Many of us think we know. We think life is something that need not be learned. The mere fact that I have been living for the last 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, 60 years, I think I know how to live. And that also, if I have been a little bit successful. See, people who went to Middle East about 30, 35 years ago and happened to start steel trading would definitely be successful. You understand? Even if he is not such a great business person. They happen to start the right business in the right place. Maybe by chance. Found the oil there. There is so much construction. Everything happens. Buy the steel from you. You need not be a great business person. But now, when they do not know how to sell the buildings that they have constructed. Now if you are not a smart business person, you cannot survive there. Especially selling steel. Isn't it? So, many a times, little bit of success, I told this to you before also, right? Recently when there was election, all the parties that lost, or the individuals that lost, when they were interviewed in the television channel, They said, we are having a committee meeting tomorrow, we are going to analyze and find out the points as to why we lost. It's reflection time for us. All the fellows who won, they are all dancing, distributing laddus and, you know. Failure sometimes make you think. Success many times takes away your thinking. You get into the checker, you think you know. Very dangerous. So, a person should firstly be aware of one's own ignorance. It is very, very important to learn. Once I become aware of my ignorance, then I surrender. Here Arjuna is not at all aware. So he continues. He then says, by destroying so many people, we'll destroy the Kula Dharma, there will be intermixture of caste. There is also so much of misunderstanding about caste system in him. Forget him. Many of us, even today, we think caste system is by birth. It is not based on Janma. Please understand this. Caste system is not designed based on Janma. Caste system is designed based on Guna. Prahlada was born in the Asura family, yet he was a Brahmana. And it is said that Ravana was born in a Brahmin family, yet he was an Asura. All these are only trying to tell us, it is not by birth that you become a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya or a Shudra. It is by your Guna, nature, quality, temperament. So Arjuna doesn't know this fact also. So he thinks by destroying all these people, there will be intermixture of caste and women will become corrupt. It goes on. See, once the foundation is weak or no foundation, then on top of it you can build a beautiful house. It has no meaning. It has no sense. That's exactly what Arjuna is trying to do here. So he lacks intelligence. He lacks knowledge. Yet he talks as if he knows. And significantly, what you need to notice is, a person who is full of knowledge, Krishna, is keeping quiet. When ignorance speaks, wise remain silent. When ignorance speak, wise remain silent. Empty vessels make more noise. We go on talking, isn't it? A sign of insecurity, a sign of confusion, a sign of lack of clarity. Arjuna also has one more weakness, that is, he needs a second opinion supporting his opinion from Krishna. If Krishna thought this war should not have been fought, should not be fought, then he would simply walk off. He will not be waiting for Arjuna's opinion. Are you with me? But Arjuna wants Krishna's opinion. A strong person is very clear this is not the right thing to be done in the context. He walks off. Duryodhan, for example, his thinking may be muddled, his conclusions may be wrong, but he is not bothered about what others think. He just gets on to war. Krishna thinks this is the right thing to do, therefore he is there. If he thought it is not the right thing to do, he would have simply walked off. Arjuna is saying that it's not the right thing, yet he doesn't walk off. This shows that his intellect is not strong. His surface intellect is talking. Deep inside, he also knows, why do we have to fight? Why can't we amicably enjoy this kingdom? Even though he says, let us go to Himalayas, let me go and sit down there and meditate, let me beg, it's better to live in alms than to kill. All these things he says, it's not coming from deep conviction. A person who is ready and prepared for a simple living would not be sitting and talking. Lord Buddha did not talk, he just walked off. He never turned back. Isn't it? Arjuna sitting and talking itself clearly shows that Arjuna is not yet grown up to that stage. So he continues, he says, these people will all be destroyed, and there will be intermixture of castes, and there will be corruption among women, and that will further destroy the system, the whole thing. Oh, what a great sin we were about to commit. Fortunately, I woke up. That's what he says. Krishna, fortunately I woke up. If not, we would have been committing a great mistake. We would have killed so many people. It doesn't behove us. And he says, I will not fight. Your word, O Janardana, that men who have lost their family religious rights dwell in hell for an indefinite period. Alas, we were involved indeed to commit a great sin by preparing to slay our own kinsmen for the greed of pleasure of kingdom. This is also wrong. They did not come to the battlefield for the greed of pleasure of kingdom. How do you know that the Pandavas were not greedy? We discussed this also. What proves that the Pandavas were not greedy?
Anybody? They asked only five villages.
A greedy person never follows the system. Do you know that? If I am greedy, I want to get there quickly, I will not follow the system. There won't be any pause and ponder. Quickly run to get it before anybody else get it. That's what Kauravas did. They did not bother about the system. Isn't it? They are greedy. You cannot say Pandavas were greedy. If they were greedy, why did they wait for 13 years? And even after coming back, they went, they tried discussion, all that, to persuade Duryodhana. So that's not greed. So when Arjuna says, because of greed, it is wrong. It's madness. Pandavas are not greedy. He is confused. He thinks, so if the sons of Dhritarashtra armed with weapons should slay me unarmed and unresisting in battle, that would be better for me. Thus saying, he became silent and sat down. Means what? Remember this, when the mind is disturbed, intellect cannot think. When you cannot think, you cannot act. When you do not act, you cannot be successful. When you are not successful, again you will be more agitated. That agitation will further cloud your thinking. That will further make you incapacitated to act. That will further push you into failures. You get caught in a vicious cycle. So it is very important for us to keep our mind balanced, calm, composed, serene, intellect sharp, alert, precise, clear, and then plunge into action. Just for action you need a calm, composed mind, and not to talk about meditation. Meditation requires even more calm mind, isn't it? Stronger intellect. Therefore, it is important to have the inner preparation. So this is the summary of the first chapter. So when we meet again next week, we will take up the second chapter. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadhaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.